Elvin, welcome to another episode of The Game from the North, your weekly Canadian podcast discussing directors and movies. Since it's October, we've decided to focus on horror directors for the next 4 weeks. And we're beginning with the director that we've mentioned a few times so far, Mr. Dario Argento. But before we begin, I should probably introduce my compatriots. From Ontario, we have Andrew Forbes.
Hello.
From Newfoundland, we have John Mercer.
Hello, hello.
And Steve Fowler.
Oh, we set that up, Steve. You were supposed to say three hellos.
Hello, hello, hello.
No, three stooges.
Or he was supposed to say, hello, good day, how are you?
Yes, hello, hey, how's it going? I'm Vaughn now?
Yeah.
I don't have tiny nipples.
Or washboard abs.
Hey, you haven't seen my abs. You don't know.
Steve has abs now?
they're ironing board abs.
Beautiful Jeff Winger abs.
All right. Dario Argento was born in 1940 in Rome, Italy, the son of a film producer and an executive and a photographer. He began his career as a film critic and as a screenwriter, collaborating with Sergio Leone and Bernardo Bertolucci to write the famous movie Once Upon a Time in the West.
Woo!
Soon after that release, he began working on his debut, the film The Bird with the Crystal Plumage, for which he got financing from his father and from a German-produced company. The Bird with the Crystal Plumage was majorly influenced by Hitchcock, crime thriller literature, and previous Italian thrillers, notably the work of director Mario Bava. And
did you just woo Mario Bava?
Yeah, I did. You want to make something of it?
This is a pretty sorry woo.
Some other time. Some other time.
Oh, it'll go down, Power.
So The Bird with the Crystal Plumage was a hit and was very well received by critics at the time. So Dario followed it with The Cat and Nine Tails, another standard giallo, or giallo, I don't know how to say it.
I think it's giallo.
And then the last of what is considered the so-called animal trilogy, The Four Flies on Grey Velvet in 1971. Then he did a movie that has not seen the light of day, as far as I know, in R1, and was a major flop, called The 5 Days, which was some kind of period comedy influenced by Westerns. Never made it here. And then in 1975, he did the very highly influential Deep Red, which, as we said in the Carpenter episode, went on to influence Halloween and many other slasher movies. In 1977, he made what is probably his most famous picture, Suspiria, a fairy tale inspired and very abstract horror movie, followed in 1980 by Inferno, a so-called sequel to Suspiria, scored by no other than Keith Emerson from Emerson, Lake & Palmer. In 1982, he made another giallo. Sorry, if I keep saying giallo. It's the German, just wants to say G.
Hey, that's not me this time.
No, that's me. That's us. So another giallo called Tenebras, starring horror feature actor John Saxon, called favorite John Saxon. Then in 1985, he made the movie Phenomena, starring a very young Jennifer Connelly and Donald Pleasance, about a girl with powers to control animals. In 1987, he made the movie Opera, inspired by the work he was doing, staging an opera of Macbeth at that time. Or should we say the Scottish play? In 1983, he made his first co-produced American film, Trauma, starring his daughter, Azar Argento. In 1996, The Stendhal Syndrome, again with Asia. In 1998, an adaptation of The Phantom of the Opera, which is apparently really, really, really bad, but...
Also with Asia.
In 2001, he did the movie Sleepless with Max von Sydow. 2004, The Card Player. Then some TV work, Do You Like Hitchcock, and two episodes of Masters of Horrors. In 2007, The Mother of Tears, the third in the Two Mothers trilogy, which is consists of Suspiria, Inferno, The Mother of Tears. In 2009, the movie Giallo, starring Adrian Brody, which picked up some controversy because Adrian Brody never got the amount of money that he was promised when he was working on it. But I think that was mostly the fault of the distributors, the producers.
And that's not the only reason he had to complain.
Yeah.
Nope.
And I would have tried to get that out of circulation too.
And he made an adaptation of Dracula Treaty, which looks awesomely terrible. I urge you to check out the trailer.
Have a bucket handy.
Yeah, it's pretty hilarious. Argento has a very getting to him, I think it's important to mention that a lot of his movies, especially the ones that he did in the 70s and the 80s, were cut by 15 minutes and more when they first appeared in the States because of the violence. And we wouldn't see uncut versions until the DVD, mostly, in America. Although they might have been restored before and shown in theater, but like they never made it on the VHS, I think. And
it's also worth noting that there is a strong divide between the members of this group.
Yeah. According to Argento, he's a pretty divisive director, I think, given his he has that very distinctive feel and,
lack of subtlety,
lack of understanding storytelling.
he doesn't understand storytelling. On that, I agree.
I agree with you, and I like our gender.
And I think things that are often featured in his movies are protagonists that have something to do with the arts, so musicians, writers, painters. An unseen killer wearing black gloves that we see from the killer's point, that we only see the killer's point of view. Choices of colors.
Usually red
and, well, primary colors mostly.
Red. I'm thinking of a particular substance that shows up quite often.
Well, red, black, and blue, are often used. And there was something else I wanted to mention, but I forgot. Oh yeah, there's often plot points where it relies on the unreliability of people who see something, that they see something and then they forget it, and with the past haunting the present. So let's begin with our good. So what would be our favorite, or maybe less horrible for some of us, movie by Mr. Argento? And so let's give the dissenting voice the mic first and start with John Mercer.
Aja Argento. No.
You stole my answer.
Admittedly, I'm not an Argento fan. Gabe mentioned there was a divide between us. I think that divide is actually the St. Lawrence. So, I'm not really much of an Argento fan, and sorry if that equates to Philistine leanings. But Argento to me is the directing equivalent of a crappy foreign car. Just because it comes from a someplace other than home doesn't make it better.
You wouldn't go 40 hectares on a single tank of kerosene. Just put it in H.
That being said, I've always found Deep Red to be particularly effective as a horror movie. It's one of the ones I enjoy the most. Part of my hatred of Argento comes from a colleague of mine when I wrote for the paper in university. He was constantly pushing video cassettes of Argento movies.
No, that's really appropriate because it's like a bad experience from your past haunting you, possibly driving you to kill people while wearing black gloves.
Into the soothing tones of Keith Emerson.
And Goblin.
Just crank the prog.
I promised one of you guys I wasn't going to start ragging on Goblin tonight. Now you're going to make me break that promise.
I made no promises whatsoever.
You know, it's got a Deep Red, I thought, had a decent, interesting visual style. And I got to give Argento that. You know, a lot of times the shots are interesting choices, and you know he's constantly moving the camera, so it gives his films a pace that a lot of lower budget horror schlock contemporaries of his don't do.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I thought the lead performance by David Headings, Ilias Maximus, it was none too shabby. I gotta say, awesome. You know, the first time I saw it, the gore just shocked the hell out of me. And I mean, the video the video I saw was a crappy bootleg version of the. So I saw the uncut Italian version.
Okay.
And with the horribly translated fan subs.
Oh.
I found the gore just like really shocking, and I can't imagine what it was like to see that in 75.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I mean, people talk about like Cronenberg, like Scanners, right? And the exploding head and people going crazy. And, you know, in many ways that was sort of like a mainstream shock. I think a lot of genre fans had seen worse in the 70s, but like 75.
Yeah, but they had to go to special theaters to see worse.
Yeah. 75, Deep Red must have been crazy.
Well, the way I think it, it's kind of like you know, the first time an action fan sees something like A Better Tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
right? Before Wu really came on the scene in the early 90s. But, I mean, it just, like, to have seen something like that, that must have been what it was like, you know, to be a horror fan and have your first experience with Deep Red.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm trying to even think, like, what, in terms of...
That being said, you know, I don't really like the movie. I just...
You hate it less.
Yeah.
I like Deep Red a lot, but I don't know. This is probably something better left to later, but I would just say before we get too far into this thing that even as someone who likes Argento, and even though I would debate certain points of criticism with people who don't like him, I can easily see why people don't like him. I mean, his movies are they tend to be kind of stop and go. The pacing's a little weird. The acting is almost always terrible. The dialogue is almost always terrible in whichever language. And they're certainly an acquired taste. But I like Deep Red.
Oh, great. So he's like the directing equivalent of Guar.
That's a very good analogy.
I was going to say Alice Cooper, but then I was like, no, I like Alice Cooper.
Alice Cooper writes good lyrics.
And Alice Cooper is not pretentious about what he does.
No.
Are Guar pretentious?
So they tend to be.
No, I don't think Guar are pretentious. I think Guar are frat boys.
Odorous Ungus or whatever, the lead singer, he's pretty politically outspoken. Yeah. He likes to get out and shoot his mouth off about politics and such, so.
Dario Argento is like Guar if Henry Rollins was the frontman.
Oh, so you're a musician. What instrument do you play? I play the turntables. You're not a musician!
All right, Andrew, what's your good?
Good. I was hoping you'd go with me before we sank deeper into the, like, bog of negativity. And it will only get deeper, I'm sure. I'm going to go with, I was sort of torn. I wanted to, you know, I really like Deep Red a lot. But it's actually, I don't think it's the, as far as his movies go, I don't think it's the best storyline as far as that goes with Argento. I don't think it's the most sort of coherent as far as that may go with Argento. I really like Opera, which not only was really the last movie that I think I actually liked that he made in 1987, but it actually sort of makes sense. in the same way that, like, a sort of Agatha Christie knockoff makes sense. You know, there's red herrings, and there's really no point in trying to solve the mystery throughout the thing because, you know, it's not like there are any legitimate clues given. But, you know, it is a mystery. There's sort of a reasonably satisfying comeuppance for the villain once he or she is revealed. And it's really, really nice to look at. Basically, the story is you've got this young understudy who's taking over the role of Lady Macbeth in a production of the Verdi opera. And the 'cause the prima donna star is hit by a car and killed. And, you know, so Betty, this understudy, takes over the role, and soon after, some deranged fan starts murdering people in her life and forcing her to watch people being killed with a rather effective tactic of taping needles onto her eyelids so she can't close her eyes. So it's, you know, if you want something to kind of turn your stomach and scare you, there's plenty there. But I mean, the main thing about the movie is not only does it look great, not only do you have a sympathetic protagonist, which you don't always have in Argento movies. A lot of the time they're kind of either annoyingly stupid or kind of arrogant.
And often immoral.
Yeah, I mean, David Hemmings, he's a good actor, but his character's kind of an asshole in Deep Red. But yeah, I mean, you have this, you know, a young character who, you know, she's basically just trying to do her job. And so you're given a lot of reasons to sympathize with her. It's acted better than most of Argento's movies. Mm-hmm. It helps that almost the whole cast, I think, was speaking English. For those who don't know, a lot of Italian productions, even through into the 80s, obviously, because this was 87, they would shoot the movie silent and every actor would just speak their lines in whatever their native language was.
Yeah.
And then they'd dub it over for whatever market they were doing. And this one, they did the same thing, but almost everyone's speaking English. So the English audio feels a little more natural, even if the lip movements don't always exactly match. And, you know, it employs the usual sort of giallo cheats and misdirection and red herrings. But it's also got an interesting aspect to it in that Argento seems to finally kind of, you know, he can get a bit pretentious, but here he actually seems to find something sort of worthy of talking about as it his movies, because the whole thing is about watching and being watched and watching real violence and watching fake violence. And he, you know, he's consistent in the way that he structures the movie so that you're always being, you're always kept aware of what and what the characters are looking at and the relationship between those perspectives. The whole movie is full of close-up eyes. I mean, the first image is this giant, super close-up of a crow's eye or a raven's eye. There are a bunch of these birds in the movie. They play a sort of major role, especially at the climax. and he starts with this huge close-up, and you see a reflection of this bird's eye. And that, I mean, it's a cue for the audience that you're supposed to be thinking about why he's doing this. And so throughout the movie, when you're given an obvious point of view shot, one of those is established early. And unlike most of the time in Giallo, where it's the killer's view, it's just a minor character's view as she leaves. This is the big opera diva storming out. It's all POV. So right away, I mean, from the very first scene, you're made to think about why the movie is filmed in the perspective it is. And so then when you get those scenes of Betty being forced to look at things and other close-ups of eyes and things, it sort of gels into, it's not like there's a detailed kind of like cinematic thesis at work about, you know, what it means to watch violent movies and stuff, but it's obviously, you know, Argento thinking about theatrical violence and realistic violence and who watches what and why they're watching it. So yeah, it's probably more interesting than his more straightforward.
I'd say that often a lot of his movies feel improvised, mm-hmm. That they were more or less made up as he was going along, and opera, it's as if he actually put some thought into it before starting to film. And I would definitely say that it's easily, for me, it's easily his masterpiece. Like, it's the movie for me that, it surpasses all his other movies, you know?
And it's not as though it doesn't sort of go to the same sort of absurd extremes that all the other Giallo movies do that, you know, he was making and other Italian filmmakers were making in terms of, you know, the over the top gore and violence and kind of the just absurd climaxes that these movies have. But here, I mean, not only does it make sense in the context of opera, because, you know, you're in a theatrical, not just theatrical, but sort of the most broadly emotive form of theater. But also it kind of feels like it's all sort of naturally building to that climax. Mm-hmm. Unlike some of his other movies where it kind of just feels like, right, we're at the end of the production. We should probably figure out which of these character actors that we've hired we're going to unmask as the killer.
And like I made the comment in our preparing conversation of comparing him to De Palma. And as much as De Palma is a much more effective filmmaker and, you know,
I'm sure there are people who would argue that fact.
But I'd say De Palma is much more understanding of how to make a movie than, like,
oh my God.
I'm a big Argento fan, but like De Palma is a much more mastery of filmmaking.
There is no way in hell Dario Argento could have pulled off the opening shot from Snake Eyes.
There's no way in hell Argento could make something as mainstream as Mission Impossible.
I think Argento could have pulled off opening from Snake Eyes. What I don't think Argento could do is make a movie that is considered from beginning to end the way that, like, Blowout is.
Yeah.
Or Dressed to Kill is.
And seriously, I was saying that because opera is the nearest he gets to the level of something that De Palma could make, you know? A lot of his movies kind of feel a bit like inferior to Palma offerings.
For no reason and with absolutely no problem, I'm getting worked into a rage about how people say De Palma is just a Hitchcock knockoff, and it's driving me crazy.
We'll do De Palma eventually, Andrew. Don't worry.
I will not choose Black Dahlia as my good.
As long as we're mentioning opera and the eyes, I have to mention one of the shot that really made my jaw hang in awe, and that's the kill from the door. Like, somebody's looking into the aisle of the door.
Yeah.
And she gets shot through the eye by somebody who's firing the gun, and the way that it's filmed is just like, seriously, I had to pause it and rewind it and rewatch it again just to, because it's so mind-boggling.
It is amazing. Silence from Steve, but that's okay.
I'm just letting you guys go for now.
Steve, do you actually have a good?
I actually do. And It is actually opera.
Oh.
Ooh.
Mainly, I didn't love the movie, but when I sat down, of course, you guys know, I wasn't particularly well-versed in Argento, and after my experience with Suspiria, I was very, 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 very reluctant, I'll say. And a few verdict regulars recommended that I check out some of the giallo. You know, I look at some of the more straight-up mystery movies or thrillers, and Bird with the Crystal Plumage was like, it was okay, but I ran into the, like, problems there. Inferno, Tenebrae sounded awesome. I read the plot synopsis. I was like, this sounds really good. I sat down, I watched it. I was like, that was really shitty.
I love that movie, but it makes absolutely sense.
It looks like it's all filmed in just natural gray overcast daylight. There's no sense of, you know, action to the movie. Like, all the kill scenes and stuff, it feels like Argento is just basically like, okay, you, strangle her. Okay, boss. You know, like there's no stand here, let me catch the light a certain way. There's no preparation. There's no, like, you do an action scene, there should be preparation, you know? But anyway, that's for later.
Yeah, get back to opera.
The thing about opera for me, opera feels like I'm watching a film. You know, like, it felt like I was watching a movie, whereas everything else he did, it felt like I was watching just a cheap exercise. It felt like I was watching something a bunch of kids in film school, or even a bunch of kids in high school who knew a little bit about movies could put together. You know? I don't know what his budgets... I don't know what his budgets typically are, but I've never seen a guy so incompetent at making a movie.
All I have to say, Steve, be glad we didn't choose Lucio Fulci, because he's dead by now.
But no, it's like an opera for me. It feels like a movie. Opera does. Like, I sit down to watch opera, and I got the same vibe from opera that I got from what was that? Oh, way back we did the one about the vampires in New York City. I can't remember the name of the movie.
Please tell me not Vampire in Brooklyn.
Oh, Jesus, no. I think I can't remember. Anyway, moving on. You know, go back one of our really old episodes to some obscure director, and it was a movie about vampires in New York City, Italian vampires. Come on, help me out here, guys.
That was John Landis, and we were talking about Innocent Blood.
It had, like,
the vampire was French, and the Italian, I think, was Robert Loggia.
But, you know, like, that was the kind of... I got the same vibe from opera that I got from movies like Innocent Blood, like these darker, you know, not necessarily really out there, not necessarily, you know, avant-garde or really, really well-made, but just competent, dark, effective film. You know what I mean?
I don't necessarily...
It's not that I'm
in terms of your contrast with the others, but I know what you mean with opera.
Yeah, it felt like an accomplished film. It felt like something that, you know, was planned. Maybe he did storyboard it. Maybe, you know, like this kind of thing. You know, maybe there was a little more to the process than just grabbing a few cameras, saying action, do this. You know.
Well, it probably helped that he was actually directing an opera at that time, so he was in the mindset of more preparing, probably.
Yeah, but I did kind of, sort of enjoy most of opera.
There was a point where you didn't want to kill yourself.
Yes. There was a point where you didn't want to eat
milk. A victory for Italians everywhere.
Did having a medal on the soundtrack help?
No. not really.
All right, for my good, I decided to go to a movie that I've seen maybe three times, maybe more, and I still can't do a plot description.
Now there's Argento in a nutshell.
But yeah, but it's so visually mind-boggling that I just keep wanting to go back to it, and that is Inferno.
You and I can't be friends anymore. My mommy says I'm not allowed to talk to you
anymore. Last episode of They Came from the North.
Well, like, Inferno is probably the highest point in his more abstract and vanguard experimental movies, whatever you want to call them. And it takes everything that he was experimenting with in Deep Red and Suspiria and just cranks it up. And, I mean, just that scene where the girl goes underwater, I think that was actually supervised by Mario Bava, the underwater scene. But that is so...
Major reiterate. Woo.
That is so beautifully filmed and shot, and just the look of that movie I find really, really great. Although I can't even remember what it's about... or make some sense of what's going on in the movie. I know it strongly impacted me. And, just the look and atmosphere. And I think that's what I get most of Argento's movies. It's the use of the camera, the atmosphere he installs, the feeling of dread that you get. And the dreamy logic. Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you said that because, you know, as much as even as a fan of Argento, I'm, you know, willing to make fun of, you know, his incoherent scripts and such. But I think it's actually kind of unfair because I genuinely don't think that during this period he was ever trying to do anything other than to make like literal nightmares on screen as you experience them.
Yeah, and I think Inferno is probably the point where he really gets that across the most.
Mm-hmm.
The feeling of just being a nightmare and not knowing where you're going or what's going to happen next, and then you wake up and you forget what was going on during your nightmare. you just remember.
And in your case, even after sitting through the nightmare three times, you still don't remember what happened.
But you remember that feeling of dread and just going through this foreign world that was very beautiful to look at, but at the same time very unnerving. Mm-hmm. And with a bombastic Keith Emerson score in the background.
At the risk of bringing out some hatred toward Goblin, I really don't like the Inferno score compared to the Goblin scores. They're definitely, I mean, none of them are for everyone's taste, maybe for most people's taste, but I really, really like most of the Goblin stuff.
Yeah.
For his movies. And I don't know, this one just totally didn't do it for me. It felt oppressive. I mean, they're all oppressive, but this one felt like it was, I don't know, it was always pulling for the wrong mood, but I don't know, maybe that was deliberate. I mean, if, you know, he is trying to...
Well, I think in Inferno, he is trying to be more, like, the Goblin scores are trying to be more creepy, you know, more unsettling. And in Inferno, he's really trying to be more dramatic, more bombastic, even from the opening scene, you know? So it's just before the credits, and then the credits appear, and it's Inferno in red, and brr, the music kicks in, you know? Like, brr, you're watching Inferno.
As opposed to sounding like a garbage truck full of nitro driving down a dirt road.
Yeah, I really wish every single movie started with Gabe saying, "You're watching Inferno."
I want the Resident Evil guy to say the name of every movie I'm watching. That'd be absolutely awesome.
That sounded like a drive-through order.
I said he didn't say it in Resident Evil 6. I want my money back.
No, it's in Resident Evil 6.
Is it?
Oh, yes.
Okay, I didn't even know.
Processing.
It has to be there.
Can you imagine if Dario Argento made Resident Evil the movie?
Oh, my God.
Well, first of all, it would be a first-person shooter.
The movie would be made entirely in first person. The antagonist would be wearing...
It would take place entirely on spiral staircases.
And all
alternating white black steps.
All the bad guys would be wearing black leather gloves.
And Asia Argento would play the Mia role, of course.
Yeah, of course.
So anything, Andrew, anything to add on Inferno? Or cause...
No, I mean, you've kind of covered it. It's not a movie I love. I'm willing to talk about it because it's not one of my choices for bad or ugly. But yeah, I mean, it's not a movie that I love, but it definitely, it kind of feels like his most genuinely proper, incoherent nightmare movie. So it's simultaneously less satisfying to me, but at the same time, I think it's more successful at what he's trying to do than some of his other movies. Because it really does. It feels like, you know, those dreams where you're sort of being pushed down a hallway and then suddenly you're upside down, suddenly you're underwater, and then it's like, what's going on? Oh, why is this rat eating my face off?
Why is there fire?
It felt like a psychological lobotomy.
Yeah, I think that's what I like about it. It's the one that feels more deeply connected to a non-conscious level.
Mm-hmm. I concur.
So, moving on to our bads. To reiterate, The Bad is not a movie that we dislike.
Hang on. We have to qualify it for this episode.
Okay. It's the movie that we dislike the less. that we don't dislike as much as the one that we hate.
as the one that we hate most. This is starting to feel like an incoherent nightmare.
I'm so confused.
Inferno. Turn. So let's begin again with Mr. Mercer.
I'm in for a world or whatever. Listen to us for the past 50 minutes. Bad is opera. Like I said, opera is often considered to be Argento's true masterwork.
Yeah.
Hello. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I thought I lost you guys.
Your connection.
We're losing you, I think.
In the sense that we don't agree with you, but you didn't lose us.
Okay.
In terms of internet.
Well, okay. Well, good.
Now you may have lost us.
No, I'm here.
Okay. So what's wrong?
I don't want to judge opera too harshly. Many of my feelings are vividly painted by a hatchet job in North America out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like Deep Red, I found it to be a much more visually striking piece than your typical lower budget horror movie. Actually, I think opera actually had a moderate budget. Because, I mean, some of the set pieces are just for Argento are jaw-dropping, even if they're equally ridiculous.
The production design is crazy.
Yeah. And it's just, to me, it's really too bad that this golden tapestry that Argento has woven is meant only to hold the massive dump that is the rest of the movie.
Fair enough.
Smith is what I called her.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm not getting any of this.
I mean,
Curse our maple syrup powered internet.
That's all I'm hearing. I'm not hearing much.
All right. Well, that was concise, John. Thank you.
What was that, John?
I said Steve was cutting off pretty bad actually a few minutes ago, so on my end anyway. So.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, blame me for your crappy internet connection.
Hey, I'm plugged into the landline, man.
Oh, you sound good now.
Yeah. Maybe.
Are you guys still getting your signal from those two cans with a piece of string between them running over PEI?
I was going to say maybe there's a killer playing around with your internet connection, John.
I'm listening to Goblin in the back.
It's the noise canceling on your headset.
All right.
You sound good now?
Yeah.
You sound okay there now.
So did you get anything I said about opera?
Most of
it. Except for the, it's sad that the beautiful golden tapestry was used to hold the dump that is the rest of the movie. I got that.
Okay. Well, I hate the main character so much. When I was watching, I called her Diane Wimpersmith. All she does is sniffle and whine.
Well, I mean, you would too if you were being forced to watch people get murdered.
I know. And it's like the villain is like, you know, we took the Phantom of the Opera, but stripped him out of anything interesting and just made him, like, super crazy.
She's just whimpering about all these people getting murdered in front of her, but I understand that you want your money back for Resident Evil 6. That's the real tragedy.
Resident Evil. Opera.
All right.
All right, Andrew, what's your bad?
My bad is what many people would call it ugly. But I find it incredibly entertaining in all the ways that it makes no sense. Everything Steve says about Argento, you know, having no idea how to make a coherent film applies to this movie. in all the best ways. And I'm talking about Phenomena.
Oh my God, you can't be serious.
I am so serious. All right. So first of all right, how can you hate a movie that involves a sleepwalking telepath who can communicate with insects, meeting and making friends with a Scottish forensic entomologist in the Swiss Alps just outside of a girls' school while being terrorized by a deformed child of asylum rape? This movie also incorporates a vengeful straight razor wielding chimpanzee. It is just.
I think you just answered your own question.
It's like if my worst nightmares were about 1,000 times more hilarious.
And see, therein lies the problem. The movie is so ridiculously absurd that you like it for the wrong reasons. You like it for the same reason people sit down and watch Evil Dead.
Oh, Dan's gonna kill you. I love this movie. And it makes no sense. It involves her summoning a swarm of flies to dispatch the, like, killer dwarf with Patau syndrome deformities. It's beautiful, and it has Donald Pleasance talking about maggots eating skulls.
The thing about I find funny about Phenomena is that
everything,
but also that it's really the movie that you can see the link between is earlier good stuff and the later
his heavy drug abuse
and the later bad stuff, you know.
Yeah,
and like it. To me, it would make more sense if he did Opera and then made Phenomena and then the bad.
It's like it came out just before Trauma.
Mm-hmm. And then Phenomena would start the downward spiral.
Yeah.
But
exactly. doesn't this movie end with the main character and like they give each other a bite?
Want to try that again?
I said, does it Phenomena end with the main character and the chimp, like, sharing a body hug?
They hug, and then she goes off and finds a glass jar with a lizard in it and says, go free. As you
wow.
But there's a chimp with a razor.
Wow.
I'm asking for a friend here. How long does peyote last?
The joy of this movie is you don't need it.
There is no joy. There is only
it's like
pain.
Walking into the desert and coming back.
There is only sorrow.
Phenomena is something that Stephen King could have come up with at the high of his coke and alcohol abuse.
Phenomena is something that if you watch it, you need to watch Raiders of the Lost Ark straight for 40 days and 40 nights just to try and redeem motion pictures for yourself.
Steve, don't try to pretend that you regularly have 40-day, 40-night Raiders of the Lost Ark marathons for no reason whatsoever.
Every time I watch a bad movie, I have to remedy it. What was that, Jim?
Phenomenon is what was playing inside Derek.
The other great thing about Phenomena is that there are guaranteed to be times when someone said, will you go to the movie store and rent me that great movie with John Travolta being the angel and dancing? And they came back with this by mistake.
It's got Jennifer Connelly in it. She's popular, isn't she?
Oh, no, that was Michael. Phenomena was the one where he had the brain tumor.
Yeah. He's the one where he had superpowers, and there was that Eric Clapton song.
He had tumor superpowers.
He got a tumor and then learned Portuguese in half an hour. It was heartwarming?
Oh, God, that was terrible.
I think I'd rewatch Phenomena 3,000 times, then watch Phenomenon.
You see, this is how bad Phenomenon is. The John Travolta version is light years better.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
Steve, what are you doing? What are you saying? You're breaking my heart.
Phenomenon is on the Powder shelf at the video store.
I was about to say that. I would rather watch Powder than watch.
Victor Salva. Jeepers Creepers 2, people.
Moving on.
Oh, Phenomenon. Do-do-do-do-do. Phenomenon. Do-do.
Hey, I'm not the only one who does that. I'm quite thinking that to myself every time I think of Phenomena. For like the last 5 years.
All right, Steve, do you have a bad?
I have several.
You're only allowed one.
Where to begin?
Yeah, I limited myself to one ugly.
There's like such a wealth of choices. Wow.
Bird with Crystal Plumage?
Maybe Bird with Crystal Plumage, yeah. We'll go there, because as I said before we started, that's probably the movie I disliked the least. But then I remembered that I did kind of like opera, so... Mm. Yeah, we'll go Bird with Crystal Plumage. I'd heard good stuff about it. You know, I'd heard it's a real straight-up thriller, blah, 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 blah. But then I got that same... You know, it was like Tenebrae for me. The premise sounded pretty cool. I started watching, and it was just like, this feels like the shittiest high school film I've ever seen in my life.
Man, you must have gone to the best high school.
It was okay. Like, it... There were parts that I enjoyed, but overall, like for me, again, it was basically the technique that really turned me off. It was just Argento's style that pushed me away from the movie. Like I enjoyed the mystery and I liked the idea, you know, of overhearing the bird call on the phone and that kind of stuff. Like I liked a lot of how it unfolded, but I just the style itself, his style, man, especially in his older films, does absolutely nothing for me.
I find especially that, like, it was his first movie as director, and I do feel like that it was definitely, you can definitely tell that he's finding his footing. I don't find the same problems you do with his style, but I do agree that, like, in The Bird with the Crystal Plumage, there are, like, whole sequences where it does feel just kind of like he's just trying to figure out how you assemble a movie.
Yeah.
Like that whole sequence where the guy's being chased by the guy with the pistol with the silencer.
With the silencer.
And that feels like sort of like the worst George Romero films. Really, like he just shot everything he possibly could think of and then cut it together. Like, you know, in Dawn of the Dead, where Flyboy is firing the pistol at shadows of the zombie in the, like, boiler room. Like, that kind of, like, haphazard slap-together thing. Yeah, that's exactly what the chase thing was like.
I found the killer reveal to be absolutely, and we haven't done it yet, so I'm going to do it now, fucking stupid. I was like, what? No. This movie just shit the bed.
I find it less satisfying than, like, his Deep Reds and his Infernos and stuff, because it does feel like he's trying to make a straightforward thriller, mm-hmm. rather than when he's sort of figured out, okay, no, I'm going to try to do these sort of, like,
surrealistic nightmares.
Exactly. Like, when he's trying to be surreal, at least it's, you know, debatably, but, you know, it can be argued that it works on that level. And Bird with the Crystal Plumage is clearly just a straightforward mystery.
But I still think it works, for me, it works better than Cat O' Nine Tails.
Yeah, it does, because Cat O' Nine Tails is super boring. And the movie is spent trying to convince us that Carl Malden is actually blind, so it's just shots of him staring at a wall.
I couldn't make it through 20 minutes of that one. But no, yeah, I'll leave it at that. The Bird with the Crystal Plumage, you know, it wasn't as absolutely repulsively terrible as Inferno or Tenebrae or Suspiria, but, you know, it
should be a Steve Power blurb on it, better than Cancer.
If I had to choose between this and Cancer, I would choose this.
If I had to choose a second time, I'd choose Cancer.
Yeah, well, I'll leave it at that. I won't go any further into detail.
All right, for my bad, I went with the Stendhal syndrome. Where to begin?
Your own on this one. I can't defend you.
I can. I have nothing to contribute.
Okay. The Stendhal syndrome for me is interesting because it at least tries. It's the only movie I've seen by Argento that tries to be some kind of character study. And I'd say that the first half is very, very effective in following the girl's descent into madness. It's basically this girl is a police officer, and she's working the rape department, and she goes...
Of course she is.
she goes to a museum because she got this anonymous call that the rapist might be there. And while she's there, she suffers from a medical condition that I think it actually exists, called the Stendhal syndrome, where you get so worked up by works of art that you feel that you enter in them and yourself.
The clicking you hear will be me Wikipediaing it.
The sound you hear will be me groaning at the pretentiousness of Stendhal syndrome.
And so she falls. She falls into a swoon to get picked up by some stranger, who of course is the rapist.
Is her therapist? Is that what you said?
Yeah, just like Joe Blue.
In an Argento movie, it's one and the same.
just like Tobias Funke, he's the rapist. And so she gets kidnapped by him and raped by him, and so she's suffering from both the art overlord and the consequences of the rape, and starts seeing a therapist, and he's really trying to get into her mindset and to try to understand this character, but halfway through the movie, she gets abducted by said rapist and then kills it. And normally that would be the way the movie should end, you know?
Should be.
It should be the way the movie ends, by her getting revenge on the rapist and throwing him down the river. But no. And that's where the movie for me moves into the bad territory. Because I was like, hey, this is pretty good. But the less I say about the second half, the better it is. I thought
this movie really did feel like Argento at his most pretentious, and it just dragged forever. And how do you possibly cast Thomas Cratchman and not have him give a good performance? I don't know. Maybe people have lots of examples, but I like him in everything I've seen him in. And he's just not good here. I don't know.
But at least, you know, compared to some of his later films, it still has that that same kind of visual look. That's still
it still feels like there was a cinematographer instead of one grip with a flashlight. Yeah.
And also the fact that Argento was trying something different, you know, like, because Trauma still just feels like a very mediocre attempt at trying to recapture the...
As Giallo.
Yeah. While in Syndrome, at least, is trying to stretch himself.
I agree with you there. He tries to stretch himself and exposes his limitations.
Mm-hmm.
Or exposes them more, depending on your perspective.
And of course, the limitation of his daughter as an actress.
The limitation of his budget when he goes way overboard with the computer generated image.
Oh, it looks so cheesy. That is awful.
Yeah. It's sub Escape from LA CG.
But in Escape from LA, I think Carpenter actually wanted to be cheesy. I don't know.
I agree that Carpenter wanted to be cheesy. I do not buy that he wanted the effects to look like that.
But I mean, there are still some nice sequences in it, and the fact that he tries to get into psychology. I mean, this is probably the most thought that he's put into a protagonist in any movie. Of examining the mindset of a particular character.
He gives entirely too much thought to his daughter sometimes.
Well, ooh. She is his daughter.
Yeah.
You know. Spoken like someone who doesn't have any kids.
No, I mean...
I would cast my daughters in everything except porn. They will never, ever...
Yeah, but would you film them having steamy showers?
No. I would not.
Absolutely. Okay. And not only that, but I mean, it's not like the shot's any less gratuitous than if it were another actress. There's absolutely no reason for it.
Dad, this is a shower scene. Shouldn't I be naked? Shut up and put on those blue overalls.
Then again, you know, I can't fault Argento for that unless I'm willing to fault John Boorman for the same. So what am I going to say?
All right. And now we're going to the deep end of the
season. We have entered dark territory.
The deepest recesses of Steve's nightmares.
And we're going to the ugly. So, in our opinion, the worst movie that Argento has done. If we can get him back, let's try again with Mr. Mercer.
I'm here listening. I've been building my energy for this. My ugly Suspiria. As you say, the evening began with blue filters and ended with shards of broken DVD lying splintered against concrete flooring by the force of a claw hammer.
It is an incident of legend.
I still have pictures.
I swear to God, I'm just like, worked that disc. I worked that disc like it owed me money. And so many people trumpeted it as like a masterwork. And it's such shit.
Can I say that as a fan of Argento, what I find it extremely disheartening that Suspiria is the example people go to most often for his great movies.
The close up of the eyes in the window at the beginning. What the fuck?
The horrible stained glass. The really horrible scene of the falling through the stained glass that looks like someone coming up through Saran Wrap filmed upside down.
Mm-hmm.
It was, oh!
It's a cheap looking movie, and his movies are, most of his movies are designed to look theatrical. This one looks cheap.
It looks...
And the lighting, the red gels and the blue gels, just, it all feels so low rent.
It feels
like you got the movie inside of a whorehouse.
It feels like an Ed Wood set. It's like castle walls where the stones are painted on, only it's filmed at angles where you can see it. Like, that's what the whole movie feels like to me.
Well, it's
with garish lighting.
I feel moved to defend Suspiria. I'm sorry.
Fool.
It's not my favorite, to me it feels like one of those little storybooks you get as kids with like pop-up stuff, you know, and the shades of color they're reminding of the Disney films, and it's meant to be like some kind of fairy tale. Like,
I don't know, but I feel like if I look at, you know, there's some Mario. I'm going to bring Bava into this because Mario Bava has a few films where he uses super, super garish lighting. But he does it in this way where it's to accentuate all the textures of every surface and to give this really strange, nightmarish. It's almost like one of those like watercolor Spider-Man animated series backgrounds when he's like, you know, swinging through a cave or something. And it's just like this weird, dreamy, kind of like crazy color. And Argento, it's just like, well, this is supposed to be a crazy color scene. Let's turn a red light on. That's what it feels like to me.
But, like, I have to admit that it's the first Argento movie I saw. And it's one of those movies that I saw when I was starting to get deeper into horror movies and into foreign movies. So I can't quite be objective about it, and I really like it. I'm sorry.
Wow.
I think, like, for me, that sequence at the beginning with the first murder is pure genius, and I even like when the blind guy is with the dog and stuff. I love that set piece. But I'll stop digging my own grave and I'll let you guys roll.
Hey, Gabe, in the interests of the fellowship, just remember that you're not alone. You're just alone here.
You walk a lonely road. Ugh, Suspiria.
All right, Andrew, what's your ugly?
My ugly?
Suspiria.
No. Suspiria, to me, it's bad. It doesn't quite get all the way to ugly for me, although I thoroughly empathize or sympathize, whatever the right one is, with anyone who thinks that. But really, when it comes to Dario Argento, there are no comparisons. Even if you think his early movies are horrible, they are nothing compared to his post-2000 work. And the worst of these that I've seen, worse even than Giallo, the film actually called Giallo, worse even than Mother of Tears, which is awful. It's like a, it's like they managed to code vomit onto a DVD. But the worst of these is one of his contributions to Masters of Horror, and it's called Pelts. This movie is literally the worst television episode I've ever seen of anything. And I'm not being hyperbolic. It is, I'm gonna go through my synopsis because I made a synopsis. And the movie basically, it doesn't start exactly here, but this is where it's, it helps to start explaining it. A hunter, and his son, played by, John Saxon and, an actor I like to refer to as Jughead, trap, get this, amazingly otherworldly beautiful raccoons. Raccoons who are known for their luxurious fur. And, you know, the ethereal, unspeakable quality of beauty that they represent. Anyway, they find these amazing raccoons, better th- even than regular raccoons.
And regular raccoons are pretty kick-ass.
Yeah, yeah. It's like watching a mink coat go through their garbage. anyway, just before they cross a barbed wire fence, you know, there's a really terribly written exchange between John Saxon and Jughead about, we're not supposed to go on this land because Mother Mater, who is not explained, she tells people not to go on. And, oh, those are just scary stories that people say because she doesn't want people around. So anyway, they go onto this land and they encounter a clearing with, you know, these ancient Celtic monoliths, such as one finds throughout North America, surrounded by traps with these amazing raccoons. The amazingness of the raccoons is conveyed through incredibly high-tech, I don't know if you guys have heard of these, but they use these things called computors to generate images now. And these pelts, you know, they just film them sort of like as they would, but then they overlay these kind of like birdemic quality, like shiny fur threads that kind of wave to indicate beauty. Anyway, so, you know, Saxon calls up this sleazy furrier that he knows, played by the acting giant Meatloaf, telling him, you know, he's found these furs, they're going to make him rich, as raccoon furs always do. Meatloaf is skeptical. I don't know why, but... he's got the hots for Shanna, an exotic dancer, and feels that apparently a single coat made of magic raccoons will make him so rich that he can buy her, even though she's previously told him that no amount of money ever could make her want to be with him. But things get a bit complicated because before Meatloaf can pick up the furs, they drive Jughead, son of the hunter, to murder. He's so entranced by the beautiful raccoons that he beats John Saxon's face in with a bat. Then he commits suicide by falling face first into a bear trap. I remind you, he's driven to this by the beauty of the raccoon furs. Meatloaf shows up, finds the corpses, figures, what the hell, these are really hot raccoons, and makes off with the furs after leaving his fingerprints on every surface of the house. But, like, don't worry, because that actually doesn't come into play at all, apparently, because there are no forensics in this world. Anyway, Meatloaf goes back to the shop, gives his workers the pelts, and they get to work on the coat of many raccoons. One by one, they're driven to kill themselves in increasingly grotesque ways, such as, like, disemboweling themselves with scissors and, you know, sewing up all their facial orifices, and then they suffocate. Because the raccoons are so beautiful. No police show up. No one ever wonders why, you know, Meatloaf doesn't bother to question why his employee base is dwindling. It's just like, whatever, even though this supposedly takes place, it seems like it's supposed to take place over at least a week or at least a few days, but you know, whatever. People don't show up. bodies start piling up. Who cares? Meatloaf shows the coat to Shanna and says he wants her to model it at, like, the big fur thing, because if he shows his coat at the big fur show, he'll be instantly rich, apparently. And, like, you remember how he said, like, she said she'd never, ever, ever be with Meatloaf ever, even if he were rich? Well, like, that doesn't matter, because now she's like, this coat's amazing, and let's get it on, because I have to wear this coat so no one else is like this, despite the fact that also, what I didn't mention is, she's gay, and also Meatloaf tried to rape her at the beginning of the movie. But whatever, she doesn't care. Because, apparently, logic, what? Anyway, Shanna, you know, lets Meat engage his loaf, which is the most disturbing 15 seconds of film I've ever seen. Then he wanders off to the bathroom, and as one does, he removes all the skin from his own torso. And then the final 5 minutes of the movie involve Meatloaf stumbling around with a skinless top half, which is, like, perfectly smooth and featureless, and it basically just looks like black rubber covered in ketchup, which it probably was. Like, there are no organs, there's no even, like, suggestion of texture. It's just like, he's got skin, and then he's like a rubber man, chasing Shanna around with his arms outstretched, like proffering his flayed dermis there, and he's like, oh, I made this coat for you. She jumps in a service elevator, but it has no roof, so she's down on the first floor, and he just, like, falls and, like, fatally injures himself. But, you know, before she can get out, he, like, reaches out and grabs her, and then her arm is crushed in the closing doors, and it breaks off like a breadstick, and then they're just dead, and the movie ends. There is no visual style whatsoever. The acting is terrible, like, across the board. The script is one of the worst scripts I've ever encountered. All of the, like, sexual content feels, like, way more exploitative even than other Argento stuff. Like, I don't know if it's just because it was so cheap looking, but it feels, like, completely gratuitous and awful and icky. Meatloaf is, like, he's really, really terrible. Largely, I think, because he's trying so hard to, like, sell this story that he's just like, if I just add more acting, it'll make it better. And it's terrible. But basically, yeah, like, if I were to put, like, a content advisory, it would be, like, gore, mystical raccoons, and Meatloaf thrusting. So stay away. It's so awful. I feel like I've driven you guys to suicide.
No, I don't even have the strength to talk about Sleepless. Because we know that Steve's Ugly is also Suspiria.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Sleepless.
Where to begin? Where to begin bitching about Suspiria? I honestly think that it. I mean, I said it. I think where is it too? I have my old blog post here from February 1st, 2006. I've never seen a more incomprehensible pile of garbage in my life. Was the first line that I said. So that pretty much still stands. Lighting, shot composition, and direction were non-existent. Acting was horrendous. And the score, my God, the score. I think Mr. Mercer said it best with his blue filters are scary comment. You know, it just feels like such amateur hour. It feels like a movie put together by a high school student. It feels like, you know, I'm going to make a horror film. Yeah. You know, like it's,
I'm baffled that it came after Deep Red.
Yes. And that's what befuddles me even more is that at least with like Deep Red and the Bird with the Crystal Plumage, he showed that, okay, no, he didn't really have an understanding of what goes into making a film, but he kind of knew things that maybe they might do when they're making a film.
I hear films, they have pictures.
Yeah, you know? Whereas with Suspiria, it was just like, screw, you know, lighting and cinematography and, you know, comprehension and sense of place or anything. Let's just, you know, I'm making a horror movie. You scream. Okay, good. You do this. Okay, good. You know, now I'm going to put a blue light on everything. Why? I don't know.
Here we are.
It's just manic filmmaking at its worst.
Like, do you agree with me that compared to his other movies, it feels cheaper?
Oh my, well, like I said earlier, the stained glass scene is just so horrendously, horribly executed. It's just, you know, like, not in the least bit convincing. It does feel like dirt. It feels like, you know, something that was made for $20 in a pack of smokes.
However, there is a great trailer, and Edgar Wright does, on Trailers from Hell, he introduces the trailer and talks over it, that is basically this, like, pulsating Suspiria title. Like, they actually made, like, some kind of bladder thing to spell out Suspiria with like veins and stuff, and it kind of pulsates while someone goes Suspiria.
Okay, I gotta go look for that now.
So what I consider an inferior but also hilarious American trailer for it, with like basically like ripping off the big reveal at the end of Psycho, but to much cheesier and more hilarious effect.
I think that was the trailer that was on the DVD I had. My DVD was just a crappy public domain release, which John then probably snapped in half. But, you know, that movie, God. Ow, my brain. Oh, yeah, you keel hauled it between your taint.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, you guys are making me feel bad for liking it now.
You should feel bad for liking it.
I took that case to take a death ride.
Yeah, it was just.
This is horror, Argento. This is horror.
It was a bad experience for me. It was not pleasant at all.
So
this movie was shot in Italy, not Turkey.
The less I have to think about Suspiria, the better. So just move on. Move on.
All right.
Bird game.
What?
You get the last word.
Suspiria.
No. Actually, as I said, I like Suspiria. It's probably in my top five Argento films, but...
It's okay.
Didn't Steve have five Argento films?
Sorry?
He what made five say? Movies? Wait, what?
It's Steve's top five Argento films. When you qualify with Argento, Steve puts it right up there.
All right, my choice for ugly is Sleepless, and contrary to its title, it made me very sleepy.
That delivery was absolutely fantastic. I'm sorry.
Sick burn.
Thank you. I've been preparing that since I've been watching the movie. I couldn't even finish it. We were talking about pacing problems earlier. This movie has the worst pacing problems of all the Argento flicks I've seen. I was thinking of watching them more or less in chronological order, because I had seen all his movies up to and including Opera, because I knew that was the cutoff point, and I'm like, okay, I'll watch Trauma and then the Stendhal Syndrome and then Sleepless and then go on. But Sleepless just made me stop because of its awfulness. It starts with something that happens that you don't know what's happening or nowhere, and then it jumps into another story, And then Max von Sydow is called to go open up this last case, and there's unending conversations between people in two bars that have no relevance at all to the plot. And apparently there's a killer dwarf on the loose.
He saw Don't Look Now. Like, oh, I can make that.
And it's just like, whatever you might think of Argento's skill as a director, try watching Sleepless and just realize how good he was before, because this is truly, truly horribly made. And I mean, when even Max von Sydow can't give a good performance, you know you have a problem.
I really want to make some kind of joke about, you know, Max von Sydow, and this is even more sleep-inducing than movies he made with Ingmar Bergman, but I really like Bergman, so I really can't do that. So I won't.
Don't.
So there's a half joke floating in the netherworld of unfunniness and awkward silences.
But yeah, Sleepless. It's horrible. I couldn't even... I think I watched 45 minutes and then I gave in. I'm like, I have no interest. And I was like, I even pushed this podcast a bit further because I was like, oh, I want to watch all of its movies. But Sleepless killed any interest I had in seeing the rest of his filmography. Because I was like, oh... And I read some reviews and I think... This is one of his better rated later movies. Like, The Card Player is like 4 on IMDb, while Sleepless is like 7. I'm like, barf.
yeah. Sometimes the ugly is fun. Sometimes it just makes you want to die. Just curl up. Let the tide come in over you.
And I think that's the point to make. With Argento, that like whatever you might think of him, or it's objectively he really started
going way downhill.
Going way downhill, and seems to be going further downhill with Dracula 3D.
Yeah. That looks just awful.
I would argue that he didn't really have to go very far downhill. It's more like he left the car in neutral in the driveway, and it's just kind of slowly rolling.
Well, I'll agree to disagree with you.
I hate you, Argento, but I agree with Steve. I disagree with Steve that you suck.
Well, as much of an Argento fan as I am, and as much as I like his camera use and anything, as we posited before, he's not a great filmmaker.
No.
He's not.
I would say he's not a great storyteller.
No, he's not a great storyteller.
And when he sticks to deliberately going for the surreal and nightmares sort of in cinematic form, he can do... I will say that he can do really good work, but when he tries to tell a straightforward story, he has no idea what makes stories compelling.
And I think that's the thing with Senseless too. Like he's almost trying to make a coherent story, but like his batshit crazy instincts keep popping up. But he's like, oh, I have to make people have normal conversations in there, and that just kills everything, you know?
I mean, the reason I didn't pick Giallo as my ugly is because, you know, as awful as it is, and there's a lot awful about it, it's mostly just really boring. Like, just really, really boring and really mediocre. And it's a straightforward, like, police procedural, very trite, and... There are none of the stylistic flourishes, none of the, I mean, there's extreme violence, but not in the sort of inventive way that he's been able to use it in the past, more just in like, oh, this guy is violent, we should catch him.
But yeah, but our directors bottoming out are probably going to come back and bite us for the rest of October.
Yep. How about you, John? Any thoughts on Argento? Are you still here?
No.
No?
Oh, yes.
Good.
No thoughts on Argento. It'll be a long, long time.
All right.
So, but yeah, he's definitely a highly influential figure that that you should.
It's worth mentioning that a lot of contemporary directors cite him.
Yeah.
As being very influential. So even if you think he's shit, he's had an effect on some better ones like Edgar Wright.
And even Carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if you've never seen an Argento film. Rent Opera and Deep Red. That would be my recommendation.
And don't rent Pelts.
Or Suspiria.
Yeah, you should actually watch.
I think you should rent Suspiria and form an opinion on it.
I think you should rent Suspiria, then bring it back to wherever it was you rented it and feed it to whatever clerk gave it to you.
Oh, can you imagine the pretentious earful you'd get though?
You can't rent that, it's Drek. Rent this instead.
I have to admit that I will probably buy Suspiria someday.
A film clerk would be like, "You didn't like Suspiria? Oh, let me give a 90-minute dissertation." You should love it.
I don't remember who it was. It was so long ago, but I remember when I posted up about really despising it on the blog, I got told off something sick by somebody. I don't remember who it was, but someone really ripped into me, and I my response was something like, "Dude, you know, I've done film courses. I know how these things are put together, and I know how much work is involved in making them. It's not really fair for you to attack me, someone who knows, you know, like, no, I haven't made a multi-million dollar Hollywood film." But, you know,
the old, if you think it's so easy, why don't you make one?
Yeah, no, it's not that attitude, on the flip side of that coin, you know, I learned from someone who did make a multi-million-dollar Hollywood film. And, you know, you're wrong. You're just wrong. Dario Argento has no comprehension whatsoever as to what goes into making a film.
I'd say that's an arguable point. But the key thing is that it should be argued and, like, you should refer to the film and specifics rather than two people just being like, "This is shit. No, this is great. No, this is shit."
Well, so, I mean, yeah, exactly.
Hopefully we've managed to do a bit more of that.
Exactly. And I mean, like, there are signs that every now and again, you know, you get something like Opera or you get something like Deep Red where – and even, you know what? I'll even say his later movies. I'll even say Giallo or Mother of Tears, even though they're terrible movies. At least – there's some cognizance there as to what goes into making a film. And you know, like, a lot of people, I used to always hear his early work, more so because of, I think, like, the budget and the look of the films and stuff. I'd hear it compared to, like, early John Carpenter or early Sam Raimi. But the difference with Argento and these guys, especially Sam Raimi, I mean, Evil Dead. Sam Raimi had no film background when he made Evil Dead. I mean, he filmed most of it in his old high school. But he was cognizant of what went into making movies. You know, Evil Dead, as ridiculous as the movie is and as low budget as the movie is, you can tell that Raimi planned. You could tell that, like, he had shots in his head. He sat down and he obsessed over how to make this movie for as cheaply as he could. And I mean, like, yeah, in that kind of a nature, in that kind of an environment, a lot of it was by the seat of his pants, sure. But he still had this vision in his head that he was going for. He still had this idea as to what makes an effective horror movie. Dario Argento just does not. He does not have that gene in his mind that says, this is how you frame a scene. This is how you plan a shot. This is how you edit a film together. That gene does not exist in his mind.
you lost me, Steve. I'm sorry. You can't say even if you hate Suspiria, you can't say he didn't think about this and he didn't plan these out.
I honestly don't think he did. It feels to me like, you know, when we were kids and we'd pick up, you know, my dad's old or my mom's big VHS camcorder and say, "We're making a war movie, you shoot the bad guys," you know, like this is what his stuff feels like to me. It doesn't feel like there's any kind of real preparation.
Despite the meticulous symmetry or asymmetry of the shots and tracking and.
I don't see it.
Suspiria. I just don't get. Even if you're going to say it's, I'm willing to say it's incoherent. I'm willing to say that it looks cheap. That his lighting approach was bad. I totally can't understand where you.
I just don't see it, man.
See like a lack of planning or a lack of.
I don't see anything coherent there in how it's put together. I really don't. I just obviously he knows how a viewfinder works, but beyond that. I honestly don't see anything in his films that to me, it's just, there's no kind of redeemable technique in a lot of his early stuff. And I mean, now his later stuff, yes, he knows what he's doing, but he's been at it for 30 years, So, but then of course it's the flip.
To me, and I don't mean this to come off the wrong way, but
we'll say it. Go ahead.
It seems more like it's like, a lack of a traditional narrative approach you're equating with a lack of any sense whatsoever about what he's doing with his camera.
It's not even a narrative thing. It's not even in terms of a shot.
Like, this is how you block a scene as opposed to this is how I want the shot to look and this is how I want the scene to play out. Like those are, there's a I don't want to say textbook because I know you're not saying that every filmmaker has to do it a certain way, but it kind of feels like it's like the what's his face approach to screenwriting. You got to have these elements and do it in this way or else it's not a real movie.
I know what you mean. I know what you're saying. And it's not that I feel every filmmaker has to follow the textbook rules, but to me, it just feels like Argento is so far beyond these rules that he's not even making films anymore.
Even with the masterful camera work and everything?
But that's just – I don't find a lot of his camera work masterful. I find a lot of his camera work clumsy and random. Especially in his early work, I find a lot of the stuff just feels totally random to me. It just feels like, he set a camera up on a tripod and hit record and caught the action as best he could.
That blows my mind. We have to stop this conversation.
and maybe, I could very well blame my own sensibilities for that. I am used to really strong visual directors. I am used to guys Stanley Kubrick and Ridley Scott and, these guys who really are meticulous with how they frame a scene and they really go for that specific look.
I don't see
that in him.
I'm not making an equation here, but yep. I'm saying I see a similar approach in the aesthetic choices that Stanley Kubrick makes and Dario Argento makes.
Mm-hmm. I definitely don't. I really don't. I just for use of frame and stuff like that, for how Kubrick framed his scenes. Kubrick really had that photographer's eye.
What's that?
Kubrick really had that photographer's eye, and I don't feel that Argento does.
I just feel like in the same way that, Kubrick and Wes Anderson are not the same.
No, God.
I kind of feel like Argento and Anderson and Kubrick have the same meticulous approach to composing a scene. I feel like Argento, even if you hate the way it looks, he really does do things for specific reasons.
Okay, fair enough. And that's where you and I part. I feel that it's completely random. I feel that, like to me, it doesn't come around. That's just let's just chalk it up to a complete lack of connection between me and his sensibilities. My sensibilities and Argento's sensibilities are just on completely different pages. And let's just leave it at that. I can look at a John Carpenter frame and I could see, textbook perfect widescreen composition. I look at an Argento frame and I just see a mess.
Fair enough.
Fair enough. All right.
Who are we doing next week?
I think.
Speaking of wildly uneven horror directors.
Yeah. Mr. Power?
Oh, is it me for next week?
It's you, I think. Well, have we decided? I think we discussed it a bit.
I have a feeling that next week's director may be just as divisive as this week's director was. I certainly feel he shares space in the extremely overrated department. So that'll be a little bit of a hint and a preview. But
Your criticisms towards Argento, I think a lot of them apply to this individual.
I also agree. We will be talking about Mr. George Romero, the father of the zombie.
Ooh, actually, you know what? I still agree with you, but I thought you were going to go with Toby Hooper.
No, I'm going George Romero.
All right.
And, of course, Dario Argento recut Dawn of the Dead for European release.
Mm-hmm.
So there's your 6 degrees of separation.
With the Goblin soundtrack.
One degree of separation.
Yeah, 1 degree of separation.
And Ozzy, of course, was in Land of the Dead, so.
There we go.
Anyway, tune in next week. Can I say that? I'm not hosting.
No, you can't. And that's not the line.
Oh my God, see? But I don't know.
Steve killed me, and he just made me want to buy a copy of Suspiria and cuddle with it tonight.
All right. See you next Wednesday.
Back to the studio.